Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. This is episode 21 of the Greenlist Podcast. Roll the intro.
I'm a Greek Australian. That's why I look like this, but I sound like this.
Okay, so I just come back. Well, it was about 5 days. It was a week ago. From Onivasia, Peloponnesos. Get a good little camping trip that ended in a luxury hotel. What are you going to do? And yeah, it was a lot of fun. I got to camp, go around my favorite place in the world, do history, eat good food, so I can't really complain. Went to Corinth, the canal, and saw some Nazi bunkers. I've been meaning to see those for years, but I know when I saw them. I mean, I've been through the area about 100 times, but I never went and saw the bunkers. But obviously, you know, the Greek government's not taking care of them, which, you know, of course not. They're really just there. One is on just this, what seems to be very badly placed dirt mound, like the dirt mound, and just a 500-ton concrete structure on top. But obviously they don't care, letting that crumble away as they should. And then the Hexamilion Wall. I've driven past it so many times, but I never actually stopped to see it. But it's really, it's a wall that goes past the entire canal. You know, it's pretty crazy. Then we went to Epidavros. I went there when I was a kid. Beautiful ancient theater. We're doing a race there on the 25th of May. And then we just went through Nafplio. I forget how beautiful Nafplio is. I went there when I was a kid as well. And then we darted across westerly. Went to Megalopoli. Went to the Temple of Vase, which I've been meaning to go to ever since I saw the friezes in the British Museum. And then went to, down Pylos, Methone, Costa, Navarino, Koroni, Kalamata. Then went, of course, can't be a trip to the Peloponnese without a trip through Mani, Areopoli, and then we went to Monivasia. And really, for such an unplanned trip, the conducting of it, not the actually planning, but just the conducting, the mood throughout was really good. That's company and planning, but doing the last day of Monivasia, which was unplanned, and I remembered faintly that I had family in Monivasia, and then I was in the museum in Monivasia. I go, Mipos xeris ton Barbastelio? She's like, yeah, of course. In Greek. Vevere, file. And then 5 minutes later, I'm in a second or third cousin's, kitchen eating that I haven't seen in over 15 years. That's Greece. Everyone knows everyone. I was in Koroni, and he goes, where are you from? I'm like, Kithira. He goes, oh, do you know Yanni? I go, Yanni who? He goes, Yanni from Pella. Yeah, I go, yeah, he's my cousin. That's how small. Greece is small. But the Peloponnese, especially the southern Peloponnese, Laconia, Messenia, tiny. There's 15 people there, and they're all my cousins. But going into Monivasia was amazing. You probably don't know this about me, but I'm a history nerd, right? And there's nothing better than staying inside a castle in Greece. Now, obviously, Greeks aren't the best at building castles as medieval castles as you might imagine them. But the quality just isn't as good as the Franks. But luckily, the Franks came to Greece. Well, not luckily, actually. Regrettably. And they built the Palace of the Grand Knights of the Hospitaller, what the fuck it's called. And yeah, so in Rhodes, the capital, Rhodes, Rhodos, the island, this is amazing castle, you know. And I stayed there for a month or two with my French friend, actually. And that's a fucking... I mean, as complete and well-preserved as it is, it's the best medieval castle in Greece. Without a doubt. And it's funny because it's so close to Turkey. You know, you think, you know, maybe that would be where the battlegrounds are, but really new. You know, it was the Turks were very respectful to the Franks for some reason. When they finally did defeat the Franks, they let them parade out of the walls of Rhodos and make their way to their ships and left peacefully. And the Turks were like, thank God that's over. Never see those losers again. Only to like 100 or 50 years later, you know, besiege Malta where they were, where the Pope gave them some land, or some land, you know, a boat in the ocean, and they built Valletta. And the Turks lost that siege. But back to my point. Mevlonghi is a castle, but it's falling apart, also built by the Franks and the Venetians and the Westerners. But Monivasha, built in part by the Venetians, but also built by the local Greeks. I mean, it's just one of those cities that gets that's gotten caught in the, what do you call it, fortunate circumstance of Greece's wildly unpredictable geography. Now, other places like this is Constantinople, wildly unpredictable. Like, this area of the world is just mountains, wild seas, and some patches of fertile land. So the patches of fertile land are obviously Thraki, that's currently in Turkey, around Thessaloniki, Thessaly, and, you know, the lesser areas that still, you know, you have to mention are in the middle there, what's it called, the Aliartos. I remember walking through it. There used to be a lake in the center of Greece, which is called, what would you call that? Central Greece. And then Arcadia, the plain of Argos, but these are very small patches of land. Like, you're joking. They're tiny compared to even Thessaly, let alone Thraki, let alone fucking Ukraine. And then you've got Messenia a little bit, but, you know, you're joking here. But because there's just not that huge, huge swaths of land to grow stuff, if you're at a trading point, right, nexus, that's where you get lucky. And trade, when you're in this part of the world, in the middle of the world, is everything. I mean, Thessaloniki and so many cities, Anastasopoli, and everything along the Via Egnatia between Constantinople and Rome, cities were born, thrived, and died based on if and how expensive and convenient it was to go through that city. And Athens just wasn't convenient to go through for about 1,500 years. And so it died. I mean, that's really the story of the Peloponnese right now. For the past, whenever Athens was made capital, after Nafplio didn't become the capital anymore, unfortunately, and I say this place, the Peloponnese is irrelevant to the world right now. That's why the population of the Peloponnese, I mean... And it should be taken into account that Patara, it counts obviously geographically, but even governmentally, Patara isn't considered as part of the Peloponnese. It's part of Western Greece. You know, it has its own state with the Peloponnese, the Corinthian Gulf, and then the other side. So it doesn't, and it's obviously divided by huge mountains, but obviously it technically is. But what feels like the Peloponnese, I don't feel like I'm in the Peloponnese when I'm in Patara. I feel like we're under that mountain range. What would you call that mountain range? I don't know what that mountain range is called. It's the whole fucking thing's a mountain range. But, yeah, it's just crazy to see what is historically so important to the country, the Peloponnese. That's where the real, you know, Balliol, the old Greece started, and where the independence war started. and where you can't go 5 minutes without bumping into history, it's irrelevant now. There's just very little going on economically. Very little. There's nothing going on economically. And that's why it's irrelevant. But back then, if you wanted to go from the Eastern Mediterranean to the West, and you didn't want to go through open seas, because don't forget, before the last 100, 200 years, open seas weren't where boats, you know, through the sea. If you wanted to go from Constantinople to Venice, you didn't go straight through the Aegean and then straight into the Ionian Sea, Mediterranean, straight into the Adriatic, just through the middle. You hop around the land to pick up resources and trade along the way and pick up water, and because it's just safer. And as you're coming down from Constantinople, you have to go past, of course, the all the islands of the Aegean, and then you have to go around the Cape of Malaya. And before you go there, you're going to stop off in Monevasia. It's a perfectly situated city for trade from east to west. No, Siri, I wasn't talking to you. And it's one of those cities that, even though it did eventually become irrelevant, like a lot of cities in the Mediterranean around the world, especially Greece, it has survived. What you can say about this town is it has survived. And that brings me to my key point that's taken me 13 minutes to get to. It is gorgeous. Monevasia is fucking gorgeous. To be in, to be and look out from, to look at from the land, from the sea, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely stunning. But that being said, the management of archaeological sites, I think in Italy is much better done than in Greece. Now, I know there's a whole debate that could last forever between, should we preserve it? Should we, you know, try and, you know, put the dirt back on and, you know, in a fashionable way so that we can, preserve it a bit longer? Or do we, you know, use it for tourist dollars? I think there's a balance, but I honestly think that balance goes towards tourist dollars. And this is coming from someone who I would say, outside of professional archaeologists and historians, has visited more archaeological sites in Greece than anybody. I walked across the country, don't forget. I won't let you forget. But like, in Italy, I mean, obviously, you know, what's his face? El Duce didn't care for archaeology or preservation. We see that in part of Greece that was part of Italy at the time. He was built over, he didn't give a shit. There's a way to do it professionally. And look, to be honest, everyone's shitting on the Acropolis. A lot of archaeologists are shitting on the Acropolis because they're just adding, you know, new parts to it. Malaga, what do you want? Like, I feel like archaeologists and historians should be happy that we're getting a clearer picture of what said archaeological site looks like. And yeah, you know, Greece has inherited not much else except for epic history and beautiful, stunning land. Scenery. And to try and monetize that to its best potential, I think, is wise. Especially when the people who are coming are mainly Westerners, wealthy Westerners from countries that haven't necessarily treated this part of the world very well. I don't see it as revenge, but I see it as fair, you know. Now, you know, there's a whole debate of, you know, who owes what, who, what. I don't believe in anyone owes anything to anyone. I just believe what you can get away with and you can't get away with. Can you get away with taxing, putting a city tax on Monevasia, 10 bucks for tourists coming through? Yeah, you fucking can. If they can do it in Florence, then you can do it here. Florence isn't going to self-destruct and isn't falling apart to the same degree that Monevasia is. Monevasia is falling apart, what can I tell you? The sidewalks, the walls, let alone the public services there, let alone the houses themselves. Like, this is a tiny town. And just on this tiny micro beautiful, legendary town, there would be a huge difference in how that town operated if they put a city tax on tourists. Maybe not even Greeks, but maybe Greeks, put 2 euro tax on Greeks. All I'm saying is, obviously this town is over-touristed during summer. 5-10 bucks for people to come in at the door. I mean, it's so easy to tax it too. Just get an old man at the door. Like, it's $5, $10 with a little reader and a cash register, right? There's 2 doors to the place. It's perfect. And then that money goes directly into maintaining the city. And the funny thing is, they probably did this. They definitely did this. In the medieval ages, East Roman ages, Roman ages. But if you come and sit at a port, you pay your tax, a tariff, basically. That's how much Donald Trump then. But you get my point. So I'm going to run for mayor of Montevasio at some point in between my role as mayor in Bosphorus here in Athens. Prime Minister. I don't know where I'm going to find the time. And I'm basically just going to institute in Montevasio a city tax for tourists coming through. I mean, it's such a normal thing in Italy. I don't understand why you couldn't do that here in Greece. Greece is in more dire need of that, right? Of it than Italy. You know, who am I to even say, right? Like, obviously, I'm Greek. Obviously, I'm from Laconia. I'm actually, my yaya from my dad's side was born in a little town near Montevasio called Ichia. And so I'm fucking local, mate. Local, mate. But, I go to Montevasio, I look at the beauty, and I'm like, the people, you know, they're using tax dollars from the state or the local government to pay for the restoration and the upkeep of this town, when honestly, let's do some maths. Let's say Montevasio gets at least, I mean, more than 1,000 a day. You know, peak summer, let's say 5,000 a day times an average through a year. Let's say 5,000 times 8 months or 6 months. So times, so 30,000 during the peak months plus 2,000 in the, wait, what did I say? Let's say an average per day throughout the year. Why don't I just Google it? Visitors to Montevasio. Number of visitors to Montevasio. Alright, very unhelpful. Let's say it gets at least 100,000 visitors a year, which I think is massively undershooting it. 100,000, I mean, why am I doing this maths? $1 million a year, right? That would revolutionize this city. You know, it would completely change it. It would just make it easier to live there and make it easier to serve those tourists. Anyway, you know, I think I should be mayor of Montevasio because I'm going to institute a city tax for tourists. And that will be used to restore the walls, maintain the streets. And my second part of this 20-minute dialogue, monologue, is I think that I really, really think that laws around building outside of the cities should be completely changed. Now, the laws are basically that you can't build anything new unless you have some, you know, oligarchic connections and money. You see this on YouTube everywhere, and it's quite popular that in Italy, in Portugal, in Spain, everywhere in the EU except for Greece in the southern Mediterranean, you can buy a shitty old property in the country and do it up, right? Now, one, Can you do that legally in Greece? Yes. Is it way more difficult? Is it way more difficult than in those other countries? Yes, because of, you know, regulation. Yes. If you wanted to build something new, is it extremely difficult? Yes. You know, even if just the processes that we have now were better done, we would have tens of thousands, I would say, within a few years of Westerners and, to be honest, also Greek diaspora coming back and living in the country and raising families in the country, in the villages that are dying, in the villages that have no young people. I know, I walk through them, like hundreds and hundreds, no, thousands. Like the agricultural land that has that old farmhouse in Greece, all of them, that should be rezoned to be able to build on. Obviously, I think there should be regulations as to what you can build, but like, why limit growth like that? I just think it's insane. And, you know, Greek property, especially in the Peloponnese, you know, agricultural and so on, could really benefit from this. These dead zones in Greece could benefit from these rich Westerners, some of them which are Greek, could come back and, you know, live their little cottage fantasy. But that's another change. But firstly, just make me the mayor of one of us. Anyway, let's go to our next topic. So, someone asked me about this, and most of the stuff I talk about on this podcast is about business, or okay, history, business, politics, I guess, but mainly just Greece. But someone asked me, and this is my friend from 2016. He asked me, because we caught up the other day, I haven't seen him in a couple of years, in a complimentary way, he didn't mean this in the bad way. Why did you change? How did you change? And how can I do it? And I was a bit surprised to hear that, because we're on, you know, I didn't know he kind of wanted to, whatever. But I'll answer the question on camera, because I think maybe I said something half. I wish I had heard what I said to him when I was a kid. A kid, we're the same age, when I was going through it. I think identity is the biggest problem of Gen Z. And of course, I'm going to start with a historical reference. So during just before the First Crusade, the laws over that previous 100 years in Western Europe changed. And they changed so that all of the inheritance of a king went to his firstborn male child, which meant that the other boys, if they weren't trying to fight for the role of king, they had wealth, they had power, but they didn't have that level of power. So they actually grew up not in a state of anarchy. They weren't ridiculously poor. They had actually a level of comfort, which hadn't been seen for a couple hundred years. And when they heard a distant call from a East Roman emperor that they want help taking back the Holy Land, they saw that, and especially because it was doubled down upon by the Pope, they saw that as a crusade. And I say crusade not just in the context of that exact crusade, but also as like these Westerners, Western European people, especially Franks, Germans, Italians, I think some English and some Spanish, but mainly French, they were comfortable for a period. They had a generation of comfort, and they heard, they had a calling, right? And I think, and obviously, you know, they went and did the Crusades, or at least the First Crusade, and then they stumbled back on the Greeks. Anyway, I think that's where we're at now. I think Gen Z in the West has grown up with a level of comfort that has made them aimless. Like, after World War II and through the late 20th century, there wasn't really too much of a question of what do we do? You work and make money to survive. Like, all of our immigrant parents, I mean, most people a good minority of people in America, in Canada, in the UK, in South Africa, in Australia, are immigrants, right? A good damn majority, maybe 40-50%. And that have immigrated to these countries over the last 70 to 80 years, since after World War II. And there wasn't a question as to what, and when you wake up, what do you do? You fucking work. You study so you can work and make more money. You're just aiming for stability. So that, you know, shit like what happened back home didn't happen. Whether it was in Greece, where it was World War I, World War II, Balkan Wars, Civil War, military junta, famines, economic crises. That's just a Greek example. Like, everyone woke up and knew exactly what the fuck they wanted to do. They wanted to work and not be poor anymore. And for most of Gen Z, the kids of the baby boomers, kids, they're kids. Kids. my generation. I'm 26. I feel like people I went to school with, that I grew up with, that I meet around the world, Gen Z, grew up not knowing what the fuck they were supposed to do. They're like, wait, I'm not poor, so why would I work so fucking hard and make so many sacrifices to make money when it has a very limited change of my lifestyle? Things are good. Now, to be honest, I never felt that way. I didn't grow up with money, and especially when I left home at 17, I knew exactly what I needed to do. Stop being poor. And I think that is what always drove me to try and achieve shit faster in my life. Now, that being said, I think identity ties into this, because when you don't know what you're doing and what you're here for, what the meaning behind what your everyday is, you need to form some sort of that. I mean, that's your identity. My identity, obviously, is being an entrepreneur above most things. And obviously, that's based around money. But most people in the West, in Gen Z, don't have that, right? They haven't needed to really work so hard in their young years. And I think that's why Gen Z is having an identity crisis like we haven't seen in generations. They don't know what the fuck they're here for. And that's why you see them, you know, like, I think I saw this one video, it's like, a cabin in the woods isn't the solution, you know? And that, I mean, it's crazy because I've thought about a cabin in the woods a million times. Cabin woods isn't the solution. Like, Gen Z, every generation wants to be against the current culture. So if the previous culture was, you know, you shouldn't be, you know, putting men down, you know, you shouldn't be masculine, you shouldn't be aggressive, or you shouldn't, you know, stand your ground, or, you know, being a man isn't, you know, the coolest thing, we don't need men, then you're going to be anti that. Like, my generation of men is anti being soft. It's a reality. Because that we were told to be soft, right? So, I mean, it's just like the man, that's why the manosphere is the way it is now. And with all that being said, on a personal level, on an individual level, I never really had that problem, right? I always knew what I was here for. I like to build stuff, you know, I like to create. And when I was a kid, that was businesses, and now it's still businesses, and now it's actually content too. Sometimes it's comedy as well. I like to build stuff like that, a portfolio. Like, building a portfolio for me of work is you know, what I enjoy. But when I think I had two or three times in my life where I said, I don't like the person who I am. I want to change to something else. I think one, when I was 16, 17 years old, and I left home and I you know, said, I don't want to, you know, go to university. I don't want to get a job in mining engineering or finance. I want to be an entrepreneur. That was like, I was brought up a certain way in a certain culture, in a certain community to be a certain thing. And I just didn't want to do that. So I made a conscious decision to change that and suffered consequences for a couple of years. And then, you know, I morphed into this like young entrepreneur, maybe wannabe. But I had a few successes that kind of gave me an identity. Those young years in 2016, 17, 18 in Sydney, I was like, you know, I'm a hustler, hustlador on the side, you know, just on e-com businesses and, you know, agency stuff. And it's hard to go from that to a legitimate entrepreneur, even in my own eyes, right? So, to be honest, I did go out a lot. I just partied a lot. And I just woke up late every day and I, you know, did a half-assed job in the gym. And I just tried and didn't find any real entrepreneurial success in my own eyes. And so when a crisis came, which was again being broke, I made a decision again to look at myself in the mirror and say, I'm not happy with who I am, my identity right now, and I want that to change. And when I got a job and then I quit and then, sorry, they fired me, I said, okay, you know, it's time to change. I think I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm not a half a narcissistic guy. And on with their own podcast is an asshole. But you do need to have a level of self-awareness to say, whatever the fuck I'm doing now, I ain't working, dog. That ain't it, dog. And that's what I said again for the second time. I was like, I don't like living in Australia. To be fair, I don't even really like being Australian. I didn't like my little hustler identity of just, you know, putting, you know, making ends meet and having to go back to, you know, doing small jobs. Like, that just didn't work for me. And so I just packed my bag, sold my shit, and left. And I'm a big fan of drastic change when it's needed. And that's when I went to Europe in 2018, March 1st, and started a vlog, you know, started VIA, which was a start of, you know, whatever this content thing is. I just started documenting my journey. And then I just started traveling through Europe. And that's, it's crazy because that's exactly, it started as someone who just travels through countries and meets people, has fun, has good, fun relationships. And then, you know, that identity from March 1st, 2018, pretty much stayed on in some way or another until 2022, end of 2020, or end of 2021. And, you know, I mean, you know, that identity worked for me. I was making more money. My businesses were doing well, were doing better. And I was a little bit healthier. My relationships were a little bit better. But to be frank, you know, I still had a lot of mental turmoil from my childhood and stuff. And even those years in Australia where I was hustling pretty hard that I hadn't dealt with. So, like, it felt like I was in a car that was faulty. And wherever I went, drove past, I could barely enjoy it because I was so worried about the car breaking down. Man, that was a good metaphor. Because that's really how I felt. Like, I really, between March 18 and end of 2021, really, 2022, start of 2022, those 4 years, I scraped through life, man, mentally. And financially, like, I was really and it's funny because I'm going through my Instagram because I always use it as a timeline as to where I was when. It really looks like I had a good time. I really had a bad time. And anyone who knows me, I mean the five people who I talk to on a regular basis, knows that, you know, these years were turmoil for me. I remember calling up my mentors and just being like, things are bad and they're only getting worse and I'm depressed and I need help. I never said it like that. And, you know, that's men's mental health for you, at least in my generation. But I never wanted to put on to show how bad things were, even though I did document the process, like I said. I think I saw, you know, and especially when you have in 2020 and 2021, when I got the Forbes thing, it's like, oh, here's the world telling you what you're doing is right, so keep on going. And then 2021, I burnt out really, really hard. Like that format of that you know, operating system of life of basically, I didn't realize this until now, but dopamine through lifestyle, dopamine hits through lifestyle really didn't work as an operating system. For me, it doesn't really operate for anyone, I don't think, maybe for other people. But like, I got to the point where in 2021, I just created this new innovative thing in my business that was working well, but it needed a few tweaks. And I had gotten robbed 3 times. I was broke every other fucking month. I'd run a marathon though, and you know, society tells you that's, you know, the massive achievement. I was living in New York, in Rome, in Barcelona, and things looked good. I started a comedy career. And I think it was there in Barcelona where I got robbed again for the second time of 3 in 2021. I'm just like, what am I doing wrong? I'm deathly unhappy. I'm this entrepreneur running around the world. I'm healthy, you know. I get to travel and build a finance business at the same time. I'm having my cake and eating it too, you know. Why am I so unhappy? It's like I again had to ask myself. I had to tell myself, look at myself in the mirror and say, I'm not happy with my identity. This needs to change. And I think that's the moment that drives every motivational, what do they call it, glow up. Like I've read Goggins' book a million times, but it's like, he looked at himself in the mirror, he's like, no, I don't like who I am and I want this to change. And then I gave up on the travel for a minute. For a couple of months, I stayed in Cyprus and just recouped mentally. And I said, for 2022, I'm not going to, because my routine was 90 days in a new city every 90 days from basically 2018 to 2022. And I said they need to change. I just said, you know, how about we just slow it down and do in 2022, mainly stay in Greece and Cyprus. And I still did a couple trips around the Mediterranean, but nothing big and stupid, which was wise. And that was a year that I didn't make any, to be honest. I'm not really too proud. I'm not proud. I'm proud. But there was no, you know, big business achievements that I did in 2022. It was a year of recovery. It was a year of tactical retreat. And it was the year that I got my shit together. For someone who is very competitive with themselves and every past year, I want to top every year that goes by. But in 2022, I said, dude, just get healthy, get your mind right, and slowly build your business back up. And 2022, that's what I did. And luckily, in 2023, I had a huge, huge year for my business. I did a bunch of travel. I did a bunch of different physical stuff like Spartan races, marathons, swims, all this stuff. And that really continued in 2024. Like 2024, obviously, I did a bunch of shit. Guinness World Record, Ironman, sold an even bigger business in Q1, and then continued, and you know, everything went really, really well. But to be honest, on the surface, again, for the fourth time, I think it was up to the fourth time, I had to say to myself, I'm deeply unhappy. The way things are, and the identity I have right now is not working. It's an improvement. It's getting closer. You know, it's getting closer to the direction I want to go, but it isn't really exactly where and what I want to be. And luckily, you know, my ego wasn't too big at that point for me to not listen to that. And sometimes it's, you know, what do you do once you realize you're not happy? I think that's a good question, and I wish I could listen to myself. I'm going to watch this when I have to do all this again. I remember when I was in Bali, and you know, they call it a ego death. I think that's maybe a good characterization of what I'm talking about here. I think that I was in Bali. I was there for a recruiting job and I was terrible at it. And I thought I was so depressed and angry at the world, the way that things in my childhood had went and ended up and how I left the country and no one gave a shit, that like I thought I was better than everyone, but I thought I was a piece of shit. And which sucks because I'm a very extroverted person and I love people. But my self-esteem was so low that I was angry at everyone else for the way it's like the way the things were going. And I remember when I was in Barcelona, another ego death at the end of 2021 I remember thinking like it's me against the world, like Tupac. But when he came out of prison, when he was Machiavelli, right? And it makes you evil when you think like that, like Machiavelli. And it's so not me. And I remember like someone said, like I was in the comedy scene there in Barcelona. Someone said, you know, my friend met you, he came through, but felt like he didn't like you. And I hate that because usually I'm a nice guy. And I hated that this person thought that I was like that, but I knew the mood I was in, you know, and I was just not in the affable, gregarious mood that I usually am. And I'm like, that just ain't me, you know. But just the most recent, you know, ego death I had was at the start of this year, you know, 26, fourth ego death. It wasn't as big as the other ones, but I said to myself, like I finished this March Across Greece, this one, at the end of 2024, December 3rd, 2024. And I was in great shape. I was in the best shape I've ever been in my adult life. 77 kilos, shredded to the gills. My legs were broken, however. My immune system was zilch. A light breeze could have blown me over. I had more money than I've ever had. And I, in the previous 6 months, built out this content kind of process that had been getting views, you know. Things were going well on the surface and internally, I felt like. Mentally, not so much. And I had to say to myself, you know, something's got to change, dog. What the fuck? And at the same time, like I mentioned, you know, in 2023 and 4, I still traveled. You know, I didn't travel as much as previous years, as fast, but I still traveled, you know, Barcelona, did maybe 5 to 15 countries every year, shorter trips, but like I still ran around a bit. And it's funny that what my job is to help people buy and sell businesses, because I talk to so many sellers and I hear their journeys. And I hear buyers and I hear sellers post-exit. What do they do with the money? And it's funny to hear young people like me, young men like me, entrepreneurs like me, you know, spend the money within a few years and not on property. And I know so many young, rich male entrepreneurs who don't even have their own house. And to me, I always said, man, like, I don't get it, you know? And that's why I said, you know, in January this year, I thought I was going to have another year like last year and like in 2023. I mean, it'd be going well, right? I'm making good money. Content's going well. I'm fucking healthy. I'm getting Guinness World Records. Like, who's to say this isn't a good thing? But my theory on this, to conclude, is imagine this. Imagine a graph. And across the bottom is time. And across the top is enjoyment and achievement, maybe. Or maybe just enjoyment. I think it's a bell curve, right? You get into a phase of your life, and at the start, it's hard to get into, you know, a new environment, a new city, a new job, a new career, whatever it is. You get into this phase, you know, and it's hard. The enjoyment isn't as great at the start. But then you get, you know, you find the local clubs, the local bars, you find local communities, local friends, the local football team, girlfriend. You start to get good at your job, and things go well for you, and you're at that peak enjoyment. But at some point, that may dip off. And the same goes for the lifetime of a business. You know, there's a bell curve to it. And maybe that it's not a perfect bell. Maybe it's more the peak of that bell is towards the other side or the start or the end. But I always believe in leaving the party a little bit early, you know, even on a night out. You know, I see it as a bell curve a lot of the time. You know, nothing great happens after 3 a.m., generally speaking, in my opinion. So I'll leave the party early, get some sleep, wake up tomorrow and go for a run. And I believe in leaving, there's this quote, I'm never going to, actually, I'll probably find it, it's on my Instagram somewhere. About leaving, there's this quote that says, like, you should leave certain parts of your life with, so you should see, leave parts of your life with a certain type of ruthlessness. And I really believe that because, like, how many people do you know that are just stuck in the same lifestyle and you're like, dude, you gotta stop going to the club. You're 74. Just like the old guy in the club. No one wants to be the old guy in the club. I'm never gonna find it. No one wants to be the old guy at the club. That's what I'm talking about. You know, you have to change up your identity at some point. Or maybe it's not a change. Maybe it's not a, you know, maybe it's just a small renovation. And, you know, to that point, I jumped off the digital nomad lifestyle at the start of this year. And I started the year, January 1st, I was like, I'm going to have a sick year, same as last year. I started the year and then within 2 weeks, I'm like, no, this has to change. I'm deeply unhappy and something has got to change. And so I bought a house in Athens. I said, I'm going to live in Greece permanently for a time. But I'm not going to travel as much. I'd rather just explore my own country for a minute and, you know, build a bit of a base. But, you know, more of my operations. And after a bit of therapy and a bit more work on myself, by myself, I realized this was the best decision ever. It's April now. We're coming up to May. And after Q1 this year, I'm like, I'm mentally stronger and in a better position than I've been in maybe ever. And that's not necessarily because I've been changing up my lifestyle or because my lifestyle looks better on paper for the last 4 months. It's because I've done the work personally. And I write in a diary every day and I talk pretty freely with friends and stuff. Like, start of March was definitely super stressful and I was super sick. I've had a really bad stomach for a time because my immune system was shot. But like, I realized yesterday, Easter, looking at the fireworks across the city, I'm like, I'm so lucky, you know, I'm so lucky to be in Greece, my country, have my own place at 26, not to mention where I've come from, which is nothing, not nothing, negative 500 aura points. But like, I'm so lucky, you know, and I had this, you know, I think like, how did I get so lucky, you know? And I think the only thing, I don't think I'm necessarily too much smarter than anybody. I am good at taking action. And maybe that's it. You know, if I see something's not working, I'll just stop doing that. The third time. Like, I'll eat. I'm lactose intolerant. It took me years to stop eating milk and shit. I suffer the consequence. But, you know, I think a lot of changing up your identity and making your life better is admitting what you're currently doing ain't working and stopping it, you know? That's the thing. Like, I've been thinking about this thing. I don't know where I heard or where I read it, but it's like, everyone's always talking about investing in your future. You know, self-development is always about what can you do actively? What can you do on top proactively to get ahead? No one's talking about what you can stop doing to get ahead. What about an investment in not doing? You know, for example, I smoke. I smoked occasionally. Last year, you know, pretty much since end of 2020, I didn't smoke for like 2-3 years. I never smoked in 2019. I lived in Bali. Then I smoked there. Then I stopped 30th of August. And then I'd never smoked until the end of 2020. And then I was pretty like casual drinking, smoking. What do you call it? Casual smoking. And then on and off, you know, torturing myself, trying to quit every other week ever since. And then even on the march across Greece, this is how dumb I am. Even on the march across Greece, I was smoking. I'm trying to do some physical ultra athlete achievement, I was smoking. It's because I was sad, man. You know, we never showed it on camera. I told Gail to specifically not show the smokes, the cigarettes, even though I sometimes film myself doing it. I smoke a pack of cigarettes. Like, it's not so much the damage to my health that I was concerned about. It's just like every act of smoking is a mini suicide. It's like, I hate myself so much I'm doing this, you know? And you know, the scientific, I think, not that I'm a scientist, believe it or not, the scientific side of lifestyle changes, I think, when you're a kid to when you're an adult, is there's just less dopamine hits. And that's how it's supposed to be. There's less, and it's less frequent. When you're a kid, you're chasing, not to mention the fucking internet, you know, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Tinder, smokes, vapes, zins, alcohol, fucking partying. It's insane, you know? Like, I know friends, especially young male entrepreneurs are the guinea pigs of dopamine saturation. When you give young, uneducated, to be fair, and I'm uneducated too, young, uneducated men hundreds of thousands of dollars in profit in a tax haven and the freedom of a US or Australian passport, dude, you're building a monster. And I have friends, you know, that are very successful financially, you know, my age and younger, and they're just chasing dopamine. And I love them. I fucking love them. They're my friends. But I was like that too, not even to the extent that they were, but I'm physically ill from chasing all that dopamine, you know? And I think at some point you have to say, maybe a bit less dopamine. Maybe I don't need a cigarette, a zin, a vape, TikTok all day and fucking all this. Like, maybe I need to just chill out a bit. Maybe I should, you know, pre-workouts, Red Bulls, not to mention the caffeine consumption that I had and that my friends have. Like, for me, what I seek now is peace. Because what hourly dopamine hits are is not peace, right? Peace is, I would say, an absence of dopamine, but it feels right. You know, like going through the Peloponnese for 4 days with a friend camping, I didn't smoke. I had one coffee a day, didn't eat bad foods, didn't spend much money even. And it felt right, you know. Buying a house in Greece is a fucking process, you know. And it's not one big, it's not a, you know, a drip feed of dopamine every 5 seconds. It's like this, finally I did something, you know, that I built. I can, you know, experience it, you know. So yeah, you know, that's a long way of answering my friend's question and kind of what I said to him, like, things aren't going, if you aren't the person you want to be, start just writing it out in your diary every single day. What does that person look like? You know, what does that dream look like? One thing I always did, I still do, is I dreamt without constraint. And no one could constrain me. Like, literally, people tried. I would dream whatever. Like, I'm sitting here on this podcast the last 9 months saying GM for PM, George Mullis for Prime Minister in Greece, EU Parliament, Mayor of Monivasia. Like, I know how insane that is. But I just don't understand why it's not possible. I just don't get it. I don't understand why I couldn't work my ass off to learn Greek, make good enough content, have a clear enough message, build enough of a great team to do any of those things. I just don't understand. And maybe that's delusion. And maybe delusion like that only works in internet entrepreneurship. Maybe. I don't know. But I think the other people who are uber successful, when I see them, I'm like, you gotta be fucking delusional to start that process, right? I think you gotta dream, dude. You just gotta... Dreaming is free. That's what I always say. The university talks about now. Like, dreaming is free. I understand doing is hard and it can be expensive and painful, but dreaming is free, man. Dreaming doesn't cost a dime. It doesn't cost any calories. It's free. Dreaming is fucking free. And every time before I go to bed, especially in those hard times I've had, I just dream about the life I want to have in 6 to 12 months. And now that's what I'm doing now. You know, I have, you know, I had this, not ego death, I don't think it was as brutal as that, but I had to change my identity at the start of this year. And I bought this apartment. I've settled my life down a bit more. I'm putting in new operations. I'm changing my lifestyle. I'm changing the way I eat. I'm changing the way I drink. I'm changing the way I smoke. I don't smoke anymore. I'm changing the way I work. I'm changing the way I exercise. I'm changing pretty much everything in my life. You know, at least 20 to 30, 40%. Things have changed for me. And that's because the road I was on was not the one I wanted to be on in 5 to 10 years. And I had, like I said, with that metaphor about being in a faulty car, I had to improve the car that I was riding, which is my body, my brain. But yeah, there's hope. You know, there's hope that you can change, because if I could change all those times when I should have, I can't say it on YouTube, but like given up. and when a lot of people wanted me to, and not privately, they've said it publicly, scroll through my posts and shit. People really didn't like, people don't like me generally a lot of the time. But there's hope, you know. And funnily enough, the times when I had no hope in myself, it was my friends and my mentors and family, two family members, who reminded me who the fuck I was. Mainly my friends, to be honest. So yeah, that's how I think you change your lifestyle for the better. Anyway, so that was a damn long monologue, but I guess that'll be it for this podcast. Yeah, see you in the next podcast. Arrivederci.